Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers lost a stupid baseball game. We're going to talk about how stupid it was and all the different ways it was stupid. Then we're going to talk about some updates to the roster rules, some updates on some Dodgers pitchers, and we're going to talk about the Yankee letter and the what it was called a nothing burger and why that was. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now, and then you'll never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder, and that is my co-host Vince Samperio next to me. Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans, just like you are. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room, so we're not quite insiders, which is probably a good thing. But we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So again, please subscribe wherever you're watching or listening, and let's talk about the Dodgers. Vince, it's never fun to do a podcast episode after a loss. It happens, you know, baseball season's long, teams lose games, even good teams lose games, but this loss to the Diamondbacks, they lost 5-3 on Tuesday night, and it wasn't your run-of-the-mill loss. It was a stupid game. It was the Dodgers had 15 base runners and yet scored three runs and left six men on base. What happened to the other six guys, you might ask? Five double plays and a caught stealing. Only three times in nine innings did a Diamondbacks pitcher get three batters out in the inning. The other six innings, the Dodgers gave them an out. Five double plays and a caught stealing. It was, they had their chances, and then the three runs that the Diamondbacks did get were stupid, you know, an unearned run, error by Gavin Lux, Tony Gonsolin just lost command for an inning. All in all, it was the kind of game that you just want to forget it ever happened and just move on.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those. We've been lucky to not have one of those this year. There's been some games that the Dodgers could have won that they ended up not winning, but this was the first one where, you know, it literally – you just play a clean game and you probably go home with OW in this game. So, and then you look at, you know, David Peralta, who can't hit against anybody else, but seems to find ways to beat the Dodgers over the past few years. He had the furthest distance, but then we had Justin Turner hit one 421 feet. Mookie Betts hit a ball 402 feet, and both of them remain in the stadium. So it was just one of those nights, like you mentioned. And other than Justin Turner's double play ball, all the double play balls were hit hard, which was annoying. You know, one of them, Chris Taylor, said he got a bad read. Down was in of the ground ball variety. That was a line out and double up at second base. Said he got a bad read on the left fielder, which just, you know, one of those things that just a brain fart in the moment, because realistically, you know, that's the one thing you are looking for when you're on second base is where the outfielder is and kind of planning your attack. And he just seemed to, I don't know if it was a bad read. He might have just taken off and not realized, and then it was too late. But at the end of the day, it's not going to matter in the long run. Gavin Lux's throwing troubles did hurt them, but he hasn't had any throwing troubles other than this one. So, you know, it's not that, I don't think it's that big a deal. But hopefully for him, as we've seen before, these have kind of snowballed before in terms of one bad throw becomes two bad throws, becomes a few bad throws. So hopefully in that sense, I don't remember if he got the ball hit to him again after that, which I'm sure he did, but he made the throw, I'm assuming.
Yeah, he had two or three almost identical grounders after that and looked plenty confident, made the throw just fine. After the game, he said he knew he had a bad grip on the ball and he should have taken an extra half step to fix his grip, and he didn't. But, you know, it seems like one of those things where he knows why it happened, he knows what happened, and he knows how to fix it for next time. And like I said, it's his first error of the year. I saw a lot of people immediately jump to the, you know, Gavin Lux is terrible on defense thing. And for me, when a guy makes his first error of the year in, what was this, their 17th game? Yeah. I think that's pretty okay. And so errors happen. Very few players have ever gone through a full season without making an error. So it happens. It just happened to be a bad time because it happened to come in the same inning that Tony Gonsolin lost his command. And so it snowballed there in that inning. The double play that frustrated me the most, well, I don't know, they all frustrated me in different ways, but one that I would like to see them maybe adjust their approach, and I'm interested in your thoughts. Cody Bellinger's double play, swinging on 3-0. Like, I in general, I don't mind guys swinging on 3-0, and Cody Bellinger has actually had a lot of success on 3-0 in his career. Corey Seager was always really good on 3-0, but on 3-0, you have to make sure you have a pitch to drive. You can't hit a ground ball on a 3-0 pitch. And so I don't know that Cody Bellinger right now, as well as he's been hitting this year, I don't know that he necessarily has the bat control or pitch selection or whatever necessary to make a wise choice on what to swing at on 3-0. And when you're facing Zach Davies, who was walking everybody, you know, throwing a ton of pitches, I didn't like letting a guy off the hook in a 3-0 count in that situation.
Yeah, I'd agree. And you know, you look at result, 98 miles an hour off the bat, a thing of 600 expected batting average on a ball hit like that. But like you said, and I agree with this, it's, I don't think Cody Bellinger is there yet. Realistically, I don't think, other than Freddie Freeman, Trey Turner, maybe Chris Taylor, I don't even think the rest of the offense is there to be swinging at 3-0 at this point in terms of just where their swings are at. You know, obviously you can trust guys and put that trust into them. But realistically, where they were at, the fact that Davies has kind of owned them in the past, you know, to a certain extent, to have them against the ropes, to, you know, like I said, Bellinger just not being the one, I do think, you know, that one was a little bit of a mistake, or just, you know, like I said, if it would have found a spot through the shift, then, you know, it would have looked decent enough. But the fact of the matter is, just putting him in that position when, you know, he is hitting well, but he's still not there. He's not swinging at 3-0 in that type of situation back yet, I don't think. But, you know, it just happened to go that way.
Yeah. And I really do try not to do results-based analysis. You know, I actually said out loud, okay, Cody, you're taking, you know, like on 3-0 with this guy, you know, with you've got Taylor and Lux coming up after him, and then the top of the order. That's one of the things, like, and maybe that is it. I hadn't thought about it in these terms until just now, but maybe it's because this lineup, because there aren't really any breaks in this lineup, you don't necessarily need to jump on a 3-0 pitch when, you know, you can pass that baton, because you have, no matter where you are in the lineup, except maybe if you're Trey Turner right now, sometimes, even though Justin Turner hit the ball well a couple times tonight, but for the most part, wherever you're batting, there's a good hitter behind you. And so take your walk and move on most of the time. And but you know, that was one little thing. And overall, this game was just a collection. And Dave Roberts said, it's the first one in a long time that he feels like they gave away. And it really was baffling that the Dodgers only scored 3 runs in this game.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, you look at it, and like I said, Freddie Freeman's double play wasn't hit as hard, but still, you know, was decent enough. Cody Bellinger's ball hit 98.2 miles an hour. You got Justin Turner's was hit 93 miles an hour, although harder than Freeman's, but his was just a weaker contact. And then you got Mookie's hit, you know, 93 off the bat with the 450 expected batting average. And you got Will Smith's with the 470 expected batting average. So it's not like, you know, just one of those nights where things didn't go their way. They hit the ball hard, and it just, you know, didn't happen. Like I said, one ball goes 421 feet, one ball goes 402 feet. If you're playing the Dodger Stadium, both of those are going over the fence. But unfortunately, you were playing the Chase Field last night, and they didn't. So it's just, yep, chalk it up to one of those nights.
Yeah, one of those nights. And I think that's about all we're going to say about this game. You know, it's, yeah, luckily Dodgers play a day game today, and so get right back on the horse and hopefully get back in the win column, win a series, and head back home to L.A., so we're going to come back in a minute. We're going to talk about some changes to the upcoming roster rules and some updates on Dodgers pitchers who are rehabbing. So thanks for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. I want to talk to you about Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens is it's basically a scoop of powder that you put in water or in a protein shake or whatever. drink it, and it gives you all the vitamins that you need for the entire day. It's 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. It's a special blend of ingredients. It supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. I first used Athletic Greens 10 years ago, and I loved it. And then I started using it again a couple months ago, and I love it just as much. For me, the way I do it, they say you can just mix it in a glass of water, and you definitely can. I actually like to throw it in my blender with my protein shake. I try to make my meals as simple as possible, and so I'll generally just throw in a protein shake with, you know, a scoop of peanut butter, maybe some banana, and a little bit of Athletic Greens, and it's great. It just adds a little bit of minty flavor kind of to your shake. It's really good. You also mix it with a vanilla shake, just straight up like that. And it just adds a little flavor, and it's a great, easy way to get all these vitamins you need. Almost everybody takes some kind of multivitamin, but it's important to choose one with high quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. And that's the cool thing about AG1. It's a small micro habit with big benefits. It's one thing you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. And if you get an Athletic Greens subscription, it comes with a year's supply of vitamin D, which is so important to add in these winter months that we're just getting out of. But even in the summertime, you know, if you're indoors because it's hot outside, you still need your vitamin D. So to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/MLB network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/MLB network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, we are back. We want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodger your first listen every day. When you're done with this episode, maybe check out the Locked On Now podcast. There's recaps of MLB games with analysis from our local experts, taking fans through the season like no other network. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Vince. So we've been talking a few times over the last couple of weeks about the upcoming roster rule changes. On May 1st, the 28-man roster goes back down to 26 players. And the plan was that they would then finally implement the rule that they actually came up with before the 2020 season, but then put on hold for 2 years, 3 years because of COVID. They were going to say a limit of only 13 pitchers on the roster. So 13 of your 26 players can be pitchers. The other at least 13 have to be position players. We got word on Tuesday that the union and Major League Baseball have come to an agreement that they're actually going to bump that number to 14 for about a month. For basically the rest of May, teams can have 14 pitchers instead of 13. This impacts the Dodgers in a couple ways. It means they can stick with 12 position players, which is what they currently have. And basically it just means that the two players they cut off their roster to go from 28 to 26, both have to be pitchers. I feel like that at least lets them kick the can down the road a little bit on some decisions. We talked about Edwin Rios yesterday and how they might have to just start flip-flopping him and Zach McKinstry. But once they have to have 13 position players, I mean, Rios and McKinstry are both likely to be on the roster anyway. And so, and then for the pitching side, this helps because the Dodgers, it's going to be hard enough for the, it will be hard enough for them to cut two pitchers right now. And then when you have guys coming back from injury, some of them pretty soon, there's a lot of decisions to make, and I think this is going to help that roster crunch a little bit.
Yeah, it's really going to help because, like I said, it's instead of having to get rid of three guys and then plus whoever comes in, Kainley, Ferguson at some point, maybe Victor Gonzalez, you only have to get rid of two guys right now, and then, you know, Morris when Kainley and them come in, and it's a little bit easier to do that now. You know, they just added Reyes Moronta to the roster. They just added Andre Jackson to the roster, who's, you know, not going to be starting every in the rotation, so he'll go back down. You got Garrett Clevenger, who was already sent down before injuries. You know, you got Justin Brohl, who's not pitching as often. So it looks a little bit clearer now, and but allows them to, you know, keep what they need, and you know, be able to do what they've been doing in terms of not letting guys overexert themselves. You know, at this point, Clayton Kershaw is going to be a five-inning guy for the most part, six innings if he's efficient, you know, and pretty much everybody else other than Walker Buehler and Julio, if he gets going, are going to be those types of guys. You know, Tony Gonsolin's has yet to show to be able to pitch deep into a game. Tyler Anderson, as he builds up, could be that guy that pitches a little bit deeper into a game just because he's a little bit more of a veteran and he kind of knows, you know, what's up. And then Andrew Heaney, which we don't know if he's going to be back for his next start or what, but it just helps out. And then keeping people fresh, as and what we saw last year, and we talked about it a lot last year, we talked about it a lot in the offseason, is, you know, Walker Buehler and Julio were guys that weren't, they had to pitch six, seven innings every time. They had to exert themselves, you know, fully every single time. And it might have ended up biting them, you know, later in the season. Now they can kind of keep that, you know, next time Walker Buehler, if the Dodgers are at 5-0 and he's at 80 pitches through six innings or whatever, even five innings, you know what, Walker, you know, take the rest of the night off and we'll go to the bullpen because we have enough arms. So it really changes their shift for the next month and helps out, obviously.
Yeah, and one of those arms that they might be getting back sooner than later is Tommy Canley, former Locked On Dodgers guest Tommy Canley. We got word on Tuesday that basically the last box he has to check in his rehab is throwing on back-to-back days, and that is, the plan is for that to happen in the next couple days in his rehab. And then assuming that his arm reacts well and he feels good, they're saying he could be activated as soon as the Giants series next week. And so Tommy Canley, it's been about a year and a half since the Dodgers signed him. You know, he was just fresh off of Tommy John surgery. They signed him knowing that he was unlikely to pitch until this year. And so it's exciting. We saw him a little bit in spring training. He looked pretty good. And I'm excited to get Tommy Canley back and see what he can do.
Yeah, it's exciting because this is a guy that they've counted on, or not counted on, but, you know, we've kind of counted him and Ferguson coming back, adding to the back end of the bullpen. And, you know, from what we saw in the spring, he seemed to have that changeup going. He seemed to have, you know, the velocity was there, and is a guy that can really help out, especially not knowing how long Blake Trinan's going to be out, and especially knowing, you know, as good as Gratterall and other guys have been, you know, we even saw a little bit, you know, Gratterall gave up the home run last night, and it wasn't a terrible pitch, but, you know, it was something that maybe it could have used a different arm in that spot because, you know, guys had pitched the night before. Guys, they'll need them for tomorrow. So it adds another arm to the back end of that bullpen rather than these guys that they do have, you know, no disrespect to Clevinger and Justin Brule and, you know, even Mitch White, who has done well in those situations. But, you know, Tommy Canley's a guy that's pitched late in games before, is used to it, and that's what he's built for. So that's exciting. We've got a lot of exciting news. You know, Victor Gonzalez threw a bullpen session at Chase Field, that he should be going out on minor league rehab assignment soon. We heard that Dustin May's thrown about nine bullpen sessions, all around 25, 30 pitches. That's exciting, you know, to think that he might be back soon. And then we heard Caleb Ferguson, they've still been pretty cautious, but he might be able to come back mid-May. So by the time, you know, these guys are – it works out because by the time these guys are ready, Canley and Ferguson, either early May, mid-May, they'll have some time to adjust. The Dodgers will still have some extra arms, and then they'll be able to go full bore after that when they have to cut the couple other arms.
Yeah, and obviously Dustin May is the most exciting of those. He's also probably the furthest off in the distance, you know, even with the progress he's making. Coming back from Tommy John surgery, progress is slow. And so it's easy as a fan to see, oh, he's throwing a bullpen session. He's going to be back in a few weeks, you know. And no, it's still going to be a couple more months. But, you know, when he comes back, it seems like everything's going well in his rehab. And that's all we can really hope for as fans, that he can come back being about what he was when he went down, because he was well on his way to being one of the nastiest pitchers in baseball.
Yeah. And it just adds to, I mean, we're talking about guys like Clevinger and Mitch White. These are guys that have gotten big outs for the Dodgers here in the last few days. You know, Clevinger is a guy from the left side throwing upper 90s, and Mitch White's played a variety of different roles. And these are guys that, you know, we're talking about that are going to have to go down or be, you know, casualty of the roster situation. And, you know, as much as the Dodgers have injuries and everything like that, they are better built for it this year than they were in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to come back in a minute. We're going to talk about this Yankee letter that doesn't have anything specifically to do with the Dodgers, but it sure is tangentially related to the Dodgers in a lot of different ways. And so it's worth talking about. So we're going to come back and talk about that in a minute. We want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And please keep it Locked On Dodgers. Can I talk to you about Built Bar? I love Built Bar. If you've ever watched or listened to this show, you know that I love Built Bar. They are so good. They are Built Bar. It's a protein bar, but it tastes like a candy bar. It's delicious, better than most candy bars. And they got a ton of different flavors, and every single one of them is covered in chocolate, and every single one of them is low calorie, low sugar, low carb, high protein, high fiber. All the good stuff, none of the bad stuff. And if you don't know what flavor Built Bar you like, order a mix box. They'll send you a box with 18 Built Bars. It'll be 9 different flavors, 2 of each, and you can try them all, and you can decide what you like. And then the next time you order, you can order just exactly what you like. If you like chocolate-covered marshmallows that happen to be healthy somehow, they have Built Puffs, and they got a bunch of different flavors of those too. The churros are really good, churro puffs, so many good flavors. So go to Built.com, look at what they have. If you know what you like, order it. If you don't, order a mix box. But whatever you order, be sure to use promo code LOCKED15 so you can get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, we are back, and our last topic for today is the Yankee letter. Little background on this. This is a letter that was sent to the Yankees in 2017, and it was part of a lawsuit that some fans filed. Some had something to do with DraftKings, I think, or some online betting thing. And basically they were suing because the cheating in baseball, the sign stealing in baseball, they feel like compromised the integrity of their sports gambling or whatever. The lawsuit was dismissed, but the judge did order that this quote unquote Yankee letter be unsealed. And so it is going to be unsealed officially in a couple of days. The Yankees fought this. They said that it was going to be damaging to their reputation. But once they had lost all their legal challenges, they decided to jump the gun a little bit. And before it's officially unsealed, they actually gave it to some reporters so that they could read it and report on it. And so Andy Martino with SNY wrote an article about it and quoted the letter, like gave the text of the letter. And it is so baffling to me that the Yankees fought this to the point where I feel like they were maybe trolling. I don't even know why the Yankees were fighting against this, because there is very little information in this letter that we didn't already know. In fact, I think the only new information is that the Yankees were fined $100,000 5 years ago for the sign stealing that we already knew they did. But we now know that they were fined for it and how much. Other than that, there's no new information here. There's nothing, you know, Astro fans have been clamoring that this was going to prove that the Astros is just a scapegoat because everybody hates the Astros because reasons. And, you know, that's why they got the harsh punishment, you know, harsh, nobody got punished. And everybody else just laughs scot-free. No, the reason the Astros got harsher punishment is because Astros did more than everybody else. And this letter is just more evidence of that. I don't know, Vince, did you see anything in this letter that like justified any of all the drama about it?
No. And I'd like to think that Yankees, like whoever was so upset about it or was so concerned about it, was trolling Red Sox and Astros fans by like making it seem like, oh my God, the Yankees are going to be incriminated in this letter. And then the letter comes out and it, you know, like said, nothing we've really learned. They were cleared of not using Yes Network cameras. They were said to have been doing the same thing the Red Sox were doing in 2015, 2016, when it technically hadn't, I mean, technically, I guess, was illegal, but hadn't necessarily been pronounced as illegal.
Hadn't had a talking to by the commissioner yet.
Yeah, yeah, hadn't been announced as illegal. So, and, you know, didn't said that they didn't do what the Astros were doing. So at the end of the day, you know, Yankee fans took a little bit of a victory lap today. And as much as I don't like that, when it comes at the expense of Astros fans and even to a certain extent Red Sox fans, I'm not too upset at that happening. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, It's still, there's still a lot of stuff out there in terms of players saying, oh, you know, the Astros weren't the only ones to do it and blah, 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 and anything else. But, okay, at this point, wouldn't it have come out already? You know, Mike Fears already put his self on the line to out the Astros. Nobody else is putting themselves on the line to out any of these other teams, or nobody, none of these team or none of these players that are speaking out have said anything to the extent of, you know, blaming somebody and or, you know, naming names or anything else. So it's just an, you know, another thing for like Astros fans, like, okay, look, if MLB really was out to get you specifically for whatever reason, the Houston Astros were at the top of MLB's hit list, which didn't make any sense already. Everything that keeps coming out, there's no other evidence or nothing that supports those claims other than guys just saying it or whispering about it or mentioning it.
And of course, because this letter did reinforce that the Astros were doing something nobody else was doing. So, of course, Astro fans accepted that and have moved on. And, oh, wait, I forgot who we're talking about. They doubled down, of course, you know, and not all of them, but the vocal minority on social media doubled down. They are more convinced than ever that they were the scapegoats. And it fandom really can make you believe any stupid thing that you want to believe. If it was the Dodgers who did what the Astros did, I would be angry and heartbroken and a lot of other negative adjectives instead of gloating like Astro fans are. And yeah, I'm glad that it wasn't my team that cheated in a way that nobody else ever has in the history of the sport. And yeah, so it was weird to have this letter released and realize that this thing that people have been talking about for years literally was nothing. One part that I thought was kind of interesting in Andy Martino's write-up about it, he just casually threw in a claim that the Astros cheated all the way through 2019. For the record, there's no evidence of that. The Commissioner Manfred's report on the Astros when he handed down the weak punishments in 2019 specifically said there is no evidence that or I guess in 2020, about 2019, said there's no evidence that they cheated in 2019. It doesn't say how much they investigated that year. And so there's definitely a lot of Astro fans have used that to claim that they were proven not to have cheated in 2019, which is not the case. There's definitely a difference between we found no evidence of cheating and we found evidence that they did not cheat. Those are different things. They definitely haven't been proven to have cheated in 2019. So I don't know if that was a typo by Andy Martino or if he actually believes that or something, or has different information than I do. But as far as I know, nothing publicly has ever been proven about that year.
Yeah. And I'm assuming when it gets unsealed, it'll be out there for everybody to see, or if they choose to release it, or who somebody's going to release it, I guess. Once it's unsealed. So we'll see if that's actually in there. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, we're always going to have to talk about when it comes up, when anything like this comes up. And, you know, you'll get the people that say, oh, you know, it was, you know, so long ago now, 5 years ago now. And it's like, okay, well, it's only been 2 years since we knew about it. Realistically, it could be 30 years ago. I'm still going to remember, like, in 20 years, I'm still going to remember, like, however many championships the Dodgers have by that point, they could have one more.
And yep.
It's just a matter of how it goes. But Astros are struggling this year. Dodgers are doing well. I know you don't, you know, take too much solace in those facts because it doesn't really affect the Dodgers.
But I didn't even know, honestly. Yeah. I couldn't tell you. So the Astros are struggling? That's good to know.
Yeah, they're
is Alex Bregman right now, still short? Right now.
Yeah, he's still short.
5'8" at most. Yeah.
Carlos Correa struggling in Minnesota too. So, you know, yeah.
I know that he got two hits against the Dodgers, and that's literally all I know that he's done this year too. Sure. Don't care. I didn't even know the Giants were in first place until somebody mentioned it to me tonight, but apparently they
yeah, they weren't until tonight, half a game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. I can't imagine looking at standings in April. Who cares? You know, Dodgers the best team in baseball. That's all you need to know. That's about all we have today, I think. Right, Vince?
That's it.
All right, so Dodgers play a day game today, 12:40 Pacific time, I believe. So if you didn't know that, be sure to check that out today. I think tomorrow's episode will be Vince and Millard from Locked on Diamondbacks recapping this series, talking about stuff. So be sure to check that out. Thank you for making Locked on Dodgers your first listen every day. Now, for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, where Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues past and present. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. I was on Locked On MLB with Sully yesterday. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, he and I had a good conversation. We talked Dodgers. We talked baseball in general. It was a lot of fun. So check that out. If you're not watching or listening to Locked On Dodgers every day, we would love it if you add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. I just saw this week we were third on the Locked On Network among baseball shows in listenership. Both the Mets and the Braves were ahead of us, and we can't really stand for that, Dodger fans. So let's bump them numbers up. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, tell them about the show. Maybe they'll like it. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. And our phone number for voicemails or text messages is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.